And then there's also Don. It's not unless the state, but he's 58 years old and has questions about his self-directed IRA. So if Timothy or Don are on the line, be sure and raise your hand on Block Talk Radio on the call-in number. And we have one caller that has their hand raised. You can do that by pressing 1. The phone number is on the screen. I'll read it for you anyway, just in case you can't see the screen. It is 657-383-1755. When you call that number, if you want to ask a question, you press 1 to raise your hand. Again, that number is 657-383-1755. And we have two callers now with their hands raised. We're first going to take caller from area code 843 and then followed by area code 336. When I say so, just state your first name only, please. Remember that, please. State your first name only and how you found out about Freedom Law School, and then ask your question. Okay, go ahead. Area code 843.
Yeah, hi. This is Don. And
oh, hi, Don.
How are you? I learned about Freedom Law School through a member. His name's Greg, and he told me about it. And I looked into it about 6 or 7 months ago, and I was very interested and then got busy with other things, so never went forward with it. But I am it's got my attention again, so that's why I submitted those questions, and I'll re-ask them. But
I do
plan on going through all the videos this weekend and likely moving forward. And I just watched Payman's pre-recorded video, and I think I already know the answers to these questions, but just wanted to double-check just to make sure. Should I ask them?
Yeah, I've got them in front of me here.
Okay. Okay. So.
But, yeah, if you want to narrow it down, that would be good.
Sure. Well,
I read
the whole thing,
so I've got answers.
Yeah. So just for the audience, I wanted to tap into my self-directed IRA, which is my, used to be a company 401k, and then I moved companies and do a self-directed IRA. And, typically when you take those funds out, you have to pay federal tax. And also, if you do it before 59 and a half years old, there's a 10% penalty fee. Is that I'm sure that falls into the rest of sort of the bogus or untruthful tax scheme, I'm guessing, unless there is a little to that.
The problem there is that they have your money. It's being handled by a third party. The third party, which in this case is Fidelity, they are following all the IRS guidelines as if you owed the tax if you don't do everything just right. So this is where being able to talk to you in person is a big advantage, and when people can call in to Freedom Law School with questions rather than email, because we get, it's a lot easier to answer, to ask you questions when we're live or on the phone in person. So with Fidelity, with your account there, which is a self-directed IRA, what do they allow you to self-invest into? Does it allow for investments like physical gold that you can have in your possession, or investing in your own company, or something like that?
I haven't explored it to that extent, but I pretty much can buy any stocks or mutual funds that I want, mm-hmm. buy and sell. But I haven't looked into physical gold. I just recently started researching that, and that seems to be something that's also controlled by them, where they hold your physical gold, which is not something I'd want. But they did say if I wanted to move the money out, that they would not withhold. They said, you know, that's up to you to pay your taxes. So they show you it's very easy to transfer funds to your bank account,
yeah.
and then it's up to you to, you know, report and pay what's due.
Okay, for you and the live audience or listeners, just so you're aware, there's something called an accredited investor, which isn't going to apply to most people while they're just working. It requires at least $200,000 a year in income to be an accredited investor. But as a person close to retirement, you may be qualified as an accredited investor by just having $1 million, which, you know, it's not that hard to save up $1 million if you've been investing into an IRA all your life. So just wanted to mention that. So let's see here. So one thing that you could do is if Fidelity doesn't allow you to invest in something because they have certain accounts that they allow you to invest in, and you can't invest into other things. If you have more than $1 million in there, you can ask them about what kind of private investments that they might offer, if any.
So I don't. It's below $1 million, and
okay.
I'm looking to withdraw the funds.
Right.
To use for other purposes.
If you want to go ahead and take that 10% hit, there's really nothing you can do about that unless you wait till you're 59 and a half years old, which doesn't sound like you want to do.
Now, how does the 10% get removed?
They take
it. I thought that would only get – go ahead.
Yeah, it's the difference between when they take the money – from you, in the case of this 10% penalty, they're going to take it if you don't wait till you're 59 and a half years old. That's done by the fund manager.
Okay.
Now, withholding, most of the time, they don't actually do the withholding, or you can write on the form in such a way that you don't accept or you decline to have anything withheld.
Yeah, they've agreed to that.
Right. Yeah. So you can take the distribution, and like you said here, it'll show up on a 1099 that you got to the IRS that you got that money. But that doesn't mean that you're liable by law to file and pay income taxes on it. So another thing you can do that would effectively get the money into your hands, depending on what you want to spend it on, you can roll it over into another company's self-directed IRA that would allow you more flexibility into what you can invest it in than Fidelity would. Fidelity is a big company that has lots of mutual funds and so forth. But another one, which we have one that we could recommend once you become a student.
Okay.
So that's a possibility. I mentioned that because you said that you plan to become a student and a Restore Freedom Plan member.
Mm-hmm. The two options, what I wanted to do with the money was take a little bit of the funds and pay off my current mortgage. And then the other funds, I thought I would purchase an investment property for rental.
Right. Yeah. So you can do that without taking that 10% hit by rolling it over into a different company that would allow you that flexibility. So it is under the same laws that don't apply to you, but unfortunately, because it's held by a fund manager who is following what they think is the law rather than the actual law, then they're going to conform to their understanding of the IRS regulations.
Yep, that makes sense.
All right, does that
appreciate
answer your
that.
Question?
Yeah, it does. And just one quick, if I could, just a quick follow-up question. Tonight's episode talked about FICA, and if I did go down the path of not paying FICA anymore, would that prevent me from receiving Social Security benefits at age 62?
So, no, the Social Security Administration really isn't looking at what you haven't paid. They're only looking at what you have paid. Or in the case of an employee, what the employee and the employer have paid. So it doesn't keep you from applying for Social Security benefits. Now, I always like to add, whenever the subject of Social Security benefits comes up, most people have the idea that they're getting their money back, that they've paid in all these years. And I just want people to know that are listening that that money that you paid in or you and your employer paid in for over so many years, that was all spent in the very year that the U.S. Treasury got that money. It didn't go into some special fund to be invested and held for your retirement. It got spent on other people's, people's Social Security benefits at that time. It also got spent on wars and military bases all over the world and big corporate drafting of funds and black operations and psychological operations and just you name it, the full corruption of the federal government. It got spent.
Absolutely.
And now, when you go to apply for benefits, you're actually asking this system that's extracting all this money from the worker population, mostly through the worker population. In fact, 80% of all income taxes are not collected by the IRS. They're collected through the employers by actually stealing their employees' money and just handing it right over to the U.S. Treasury and also matching it with the same amount and from their profits. So they're missing out on a bunch of profits by just sending 7.65% of all their employees' wages directly to the U.S. Treasury. So that value, the value that you're adding to an employee, an employer, or that you're doing for your own business, about 14.2% of that, if you're paying Social Security and Medicare taxes, is going to the U.S. Treasury. That's besides the regular individual income tax. So I just wanted to give everybody that little insight into what you're actually doing when you apply for Social Security benefits. It's a decision. We're not going to judge you if you make that decision. In fact, we will protect you because Social Security benefits are not taxable by law. They're not one of the trade or business. They're taxable if you're in the District of Columbia as a citizen or resident of the District of Columbia, but not as a non-government employee or non-government contractor.
Are there any other strings with those funds? I mean, it sounds like you don't recommend it, perhaps. It's better to just exit the system.
Me personally, I'm not going to buy into there. To me also, I just want to say it's casting spells. It's saying you've reached 63 to 70 years old, and so you're old. You know, you should consider just ending your work, and we'll pay you to just sit around and rot. You know, instead of being an active member of society, being held up by society as the wise people of the
right.
of the age who are experienced and can still, you know, at 63 years old, I feel like I'm just haven't even reached middle age yet. I have energy and I have a lot to do. I'm here to produce. I'm here to help people understand freedom and the way the world could work instead of the way it is right now.
But is it preventing you from working, though? Like, or you're just saying it's the mindset behind it?
Yeah, it's not preventing anyone from just going out on their own and doing whatever they want. But, if you think that the income tax laws do apply to you, then your tendency is going to be, well, I don't need to work because if I do work, then they're going to tax me on that. You know, now I'm getting Social Security and I'm working, and so I'm being taxed more, and so I'm just going to stop. You know, I'm just going to rest on my laurels now, so forth. So.
That's for the average person, but for someone like you that's in the know, why wouldn't you just collect that and do what you're doing?
Because I know that that's coming from people who have been deceived into paying it.
Right. Okay.
They're working hard and they don't, you know, they don't realize. And also, there's a certain aspect to it of I don't want to spend my energy dealing with the Social Security Administration and the federal government and having that feeling of dependency, like, well, what'll happen if I stop getting this money? It's just it's a mindset that I have that I don't want to feel obligated in any way.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's a decision everybody has to make. I'm maybe an extremist in this regard.
Yeah. By the way, you said your name at the beginning. Is it Ben?
Benny Hillman.
Mm-hmm. Benny Hillman. Okay. Yeah.
Benny. Uh-huh.
Benny. Got it.
Yep. All right. Does that answer all questions
it
for
does.
Tonight?
Really appreciate it, Benny. Yep.
You're so
Thanks
welcome.
So much.
All right. We'll move on to area code 336, followed by area code 706. Go ahead, area code 336. State your first name only, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then state your question.
Yes, this is Richard, and I heard about Freedom Law School through my minister, as I'm also a minister and trying to find out what the truth is.
Great.
And I've worked with Paymon through the Freedom Hour for quite some time now with an issue that I have. And all of this is at the state level. I'm not having
okay.
any issue with the IRS. But I've been following Paymon's instructions. And I'm at a point now where I've contested the assessment that the North Carolina Department of Revenue put together. And I just had a conference call with them, and their main push is, am I going to file my tax returns, which I have not, either federal or state, or, you know, am I going to continue to contest this, and therefore I'm going to have to appear before the Office of Administrative Hearings and speak to a judge about that.
Hmm.
So
you've already done a consultation with Paymon about this?
Well, I've been doing it through the Freedom Hours. Quite a few of them. And he has been extremely helpful. And I've sent the petitions. I've actually sent petitions to my former congressman in North Carolina and my new ones in Tennessee, where I'm currently located. And I've been going over the arguments to try to get those solid in my head for when I do have to appear before this administrative law judge before it, you know, it goes to a court to where
uh-huh.
I have to present all to the jury. And while I was on this conference call, he was offering some
just counsel. let me stop you there. It's not going to go to a jury unless you're being held as a or being charged as a criminal. A jury
okay.
trial is just for criminals, so you'd be just going before a judge.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, if I keep contesting and keep contesting, you know, eventually, you know, it would be in front of a jury, but didn't know that for sure. But thank you for that clarification.
No, there's the criminal courts and the civil courts. Civil courts are just about the money, and that's all this is about.
Okay.
Nothing to worry about there. And especially since you sent in your petitions, you actually sent them in twice, right? Once to your North Carolina and once to your Tennessee
Correct.
Representatives. Just so
Correct.
Everybody knows, that's not necessary. It's only it's only a one-time thing that you need to do or that's a good idea to do. In the extremely rare case that you might, the IRS might come sniffing around to see if it would be if it would be easy for them to send you to prison, basically, because you'll know when they are thinking about that they'll tell you that we're thinking about charging you criminally. What do you have to say for yourself? And that's when you would produce the petitions to Congress and say, well, if you do that, I'm going to be presenting this to the jury and in my defense that I didn't willfully fail to file any taxes, because my understanding of the law is I didn't owe the taxes in the first place.
Right.
And so as soon as they know that, they're going to move on to easier pickings.
Okay.
So.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting as a minister when I'm trying to interpret scripture and interpret God's law, it's extremely important that you do not take implicit verses where God doesn't explicitly state certain things and then use those implicit verses to contradict explicit verses that he uses throughout the scriptures. It's the key fundamental key fundamental principle, and that's very much in alignment with what you guys in Paymon have done with this petition, where you've presented all of the U.S. Supreme Court decisions, and especially the one where it says that, you know, if there is some kind of doubt, benefit of the doubt goes to the taxpayer as opposed to the government. I really like that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that this particular person, and this is, again, at the North Carolina Department of Revenue level, one of the objections that they were putting forth with the claim, because Paymon had me send the petition to the North Carolina people for them to see the evidence. And one of the objections that they had, or counterclaims, had to do with the IRC definition in section 7701.
Okay.
And in, this would be in part C.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you can pull that up real quickly.
Includes and including.
And, yeah, you've probably had this already.
I was thinking
got to be a legitimate way to argue against the claims that he's saying, because he was saying that this section in C made the definitions that were explicit, and what we're saying excludes the normal meanings of the words. He's saying that this definition C opened it all back up to where it would then not restrict or exclude the meanings of the words, but it actually would increase the meaning of them. How would I argue against it?
Yeah. Well, we do have a video on this subject, a presentation that we did. But just so everybody hearing this can wrap their minds about it in a quick and easy way, we have on screen here, I'm looking at the actual wording of that. It's a section 7701C, subsection, includes and including. The term includes and including, when used in a definition contained in this title, shall not be deemed to exclude other things otherwise within the meaning of the term defined. Okay, so let me break that down a little bit. It's saying that if there is something else in the definition gives it meaning, but then a phrase comes along that just says includes, then whatever is added to the definition is just adding to the meaning. It's not changing the meaning. It doesn't become the meaning. And I'll give you an example of that. I'm going to go to actually up here where, let me see if I can find where Paymon talked about section 4321. I don't see it on here. Oh, well, let me pull it up for you. 4321. So that's not right. Well, let me just go here. Title 26. Here's the easiest way to do it. 26. Well, no, I can't remember the section number. 4312. 4312. That's what it was. 26. 4312. No. 46. Yeah, that's it. Okay, let me expand this.
What's
so
46,
here's 4612. Yeah. So he talked about that in his presentation that he recorded for tonight, that he did earlier. So here's a prime example of this. In general, the term United States means, so it doesn't use the word includes here, just uses the word means. The term United States means the 50 states, the District of Columbia, and these island territories and possessions. The principles of Section 638 shall apply for purposes of the term United States. So that doesn't use the word includes, but it does the same thing as this C right down here. The term United States includes any foreign trade zones of the United States. So here's a prime example because it uses the word includes, but we've already had a bunch of other meanings that have been included. And so definition is saying is that if there's something, if there are other things otherwise within the meaning of the term defined as it's defined, I'll just add that, then it doesn't exclude those things. It doesn't exclude the 50 states or the or D.C. or the island territories or the continental shelf areas. It actually adds the foreign trade zones to all those things. Got that? Does that make sense? You still there?
Can I try to put that in my own words?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying like in this situation where you've got an A, B, and a C. Is it that they have to list those things out?
It's just that when they use the word includes, if there are other things otherwise within the meaning of the term defined, such as all these other things that are within the meaning, then the things that are included after the word includes or including shall not be deemed to exclude all those other things. So the foreign trade zones in this example do not, because this C down here has the meaning of United States, the term United States includes the foreign trade zones, that does not exclude all these other things that were already included. That makes sense?
Okay, I think so. Just because it's saying there in C that it includes all the foreign trade zones, that doesn't supersede that it also includes the continental shelf.
Correct.
And it doesn't supersede includes the 50 states.
Correct.
It just means all of those things are inclusive.
Right.
Because of the explicit definition within this particular chapter. Chapter. for with the
right.
term. You, okay.
Exactly. Yep.
Could you go back to 7? Go ahead.
So when we go down to 3121, what was it? E, I think. When we go down here, these are the definitions. The term state includes DC and these four island territories. The term United States includes these four island territories, and that's it. There's nothing else there. And you can't read into this that it's the dictionary definition. There's actually a Supreme Court decision about that I won't get into, but the Supreme Court says you can't use the dictionary definition or the common understanding of the term. Otherwise, what would be the point in having this glossary of terms, of these definitions here? Why would you need
right.
these definitions if you could just use the dictionary meaning of the term United States?
Right. Or if I could just make something up on the fly, you know, you cannot use implication to add to the meaning when you've expressly given it an explicit definition.
Yeah, exactly. And this actually really applies and will help you to understand how trying to use these arguments that we're presenting to you in our petitions to Congress and all our videos and so forth, that are step one, showing you what the law actually means and the deception behind the definitions, trying to use that in, for instance, tax court or your North Carolina Department of Revenue hearing isn't going to work, and let me explain why. The lower courts, and when I say lower courts, I mean all the courts lower than the Supreme Court, according to the Constitution, are known as inferior courts. The Constitution uses the word inferior to describe all of the courts besides the Supreme Court. So those lower courts, the first level courts, like tax court and the district courts, they throw out these arguments that we make. Lots of people have tried using these arguments in these lower courts, and they throw them out. And then a lot of people have taken it to the next level, to take it to the circuit courts, and the circuit courts throw them out. And then the person is left throwing up their hands and saying, well, I have to take it to the Supreme Court now. And so they take it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court just ignores them, because the Supreme Court doesn't have to take any cases they don't want to. And they're not going to take any cases that upset the apple cart and keep, you know, trillions of dollars from coming into the U.S. Treasury every year. So that's the quandary we have here in the United States of America, that our court system is set up in such a way that it continues the status quo. And so that's why our the experience that Paimon has developed over these 30 years and his understanding of how the court system works and how inept the IRS and the Department of what we call injustice,
right.
How inept they are, we can almost always find other ways to get around it. And in the very unlikely situation where they are able to successfully go through all the hoops to taking you through civil court to try to collect money from you when you haven't filed, which nowadays is pretty much unheard of. But if you were to get to that point and you were a Restore Freedom Plan member, then no matter when in the rest of your life or any covered year from the time you begin your membership under the Restore Freedom Plan, we will reimburse you for any money that the IRS would be able to levy, any property that they would be able to take from you. We would just reimburse you for that. So that's the power and appeal of the Restore Freedom Plan, is to have that kind of protection and that kind of experience in dealing with the courts. Now, in your case, your question really is about the state of North Carolina, in which the state of North Carolina is one of those piggyback states,
right,
which most of them are, that charge, that have income tax laws and forms. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be easy to win this case. And we could help you take it as far as we can, but with the states, we don't have that same lifetime guarantee as we do with the IRS in the Restore Freedom Plan membership. But we would actually draft the letters for you if you became a student, and we would help you in every other way that we could. We just can't guarantee it results in North Carolina. Are you still living in North Carolina and plan on living there?
No, I'm in Tennessee at the moment.
Oh, you're in Tennessee dealing with the North Carolina tax collection?
It's correct.
Oh, okay. Well, that helps. Because, what can they do? Are you doing business in North Carolina?
No.
All right. Well, there's really, you could kind of drop it and just, what can they do? They can't file a lien against you because you're not in North Carolina. Do you own any properties in North Carolina?
I do not.
Yeah, so they can't put a lien on you against your real estate. They can't levy your church. Can't levy they can keep sending you letters.
They do that.
Especially if they have their your address in Tennessee now, they'll keep sending your letters.
Right. The last thing that Paymon said was that, if the administrative law judge rules against me at the hearing after they filed their final determination of their assessment of my taxes that are owed, then I would just be doing a summary for judgment after that.
Uh-huh.
And then see what happens moving forward. So that's kind of where I was.
So Paymon might have been, because of your situation, living in Tennessee, and then they can't really collect from you anyway, he might have been having you go ahead and fight them as best you can and see where it leads. maybe you can win a success using these arguments where other people haven't been able to. And if you can, then it can go into the, go up against all the other cases that haven't succeeded. But that's up to you. You know, if you want to spend your energy on that, just to try to see what would happen. I don't hold out a whole, you know, a lot of hope for you, but that may have been Paimon's thinking.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I understood this one objection that this person that I just talked to for 20 minutes, and he brought this thing up. I just want to be able to speak against the claim, and it seemed like he was implying that one definition in Section C of 7701 countered, you know, all the Supreme Court rulings that you know, you guys have in those petitions. And
no, it doesn't. Actually, there's they bring up some lower court case that quotes a footnote in a Supreme Court case, and they use that footnote to make it seem like the term includes always means it's an expansion of the meaning. But that case, and it's, I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's kind of a strange name. Helvern, I think is the name of it. Let me see if I can quickly find it. Helvern. Helvern court case. Helvern versus landmark case here. No. Well, anyway, I have it somewhere in all my research in our system. That you can just ignore the 90-second thing because it'll go on. So the actual wording of the case in the body of the text of the body of the Supreme Court opinion makes it clear that sometimes the word includes is synonymous with the term the word means. So in the case that we're looking at here, when it says includes, you can take that to mean means, because there is nothing else besides these four island territories included. So you could substitute the word means for that word includes. So it would read, the term United States, when used in a geographical sense, means the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, Guam, and American Samoa.
Okay.
And when it says, when used in a geographical sense, like for instance, in the section 7701 definition of United States, it says that as well. If it's not, the times when it's not a geographical sense are when, for instance, the term United States is talking about the federal government itself, or the nation as a whole, amongst the family of nations. I think Paimon went. I think he went through the Supreme Court decision about that, Fox versus Standard Oil Company of New Jersey. Anyway, I'm going on probably too long, but the bottom line is that they use all kinds of arguments to try to put holes in our arguments, and none of them fly against the Supreme Court decisions.
Right. one of the court cases, I don't know if this is the one you were thinking of, but they referred to something called Taliaferro versus Freeman.
Uh-huh.
Does that ring a bell?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that one. I don't remember the details of it offhand, but I should do a presentation sometime on this whole subject because I have some insights that Paymont doesn't usually go into. But let's see, there's a frivolous, the IRS has a frivolous contentions list. And Taliaferro, it's actually pronounced Tolliver, spelled Taliaferro. There's a Tolliver County in Georgia. That's why I know that. Spelled the same way. Let's see here. Truth about, yeah, so they have these lists of arguments. So, for instance, the contention here, C1, taxpayer is not a citizen of the United States, and thus is not subject to the federal income tax laws. The United States consists only of the District of Columbia. I think it's probably somewhere in here is the Tolliver case. Yeah, here it is right here, Tolliver versus Freeman. The 11th Circuit upheld the lower court's dismissal of Mr. Tolliver's complaint seeking to enjoin the IRS from collecting taxes. The court rejected as meritless his argument that despite his U.S. citizenship, he is, for purposes of the tax code, a non-resident alien who is subject to taxation only on income that is connected with the conduct of a trade or business. Just make that bigger so everybody can see that. Now, the thing to note about all these court cases that the IRS pulls up here to counteract these contentions is that they're all lower court cases. If it was a Supreme Court case, it would have U.S. there where this federal, whatever APP apostrophe X is. This is the third district, second district. These are all inferior court cases. AFTR, whatever that is. Tax court memo. So these were tax court cases, all lower court cases. So they don't want you to take you to the Supreme Court. They don't want to go there. And they won't. They don't do it. Here again, third district, second district, tax court memo. So we only use Supreme Court decisions for that very reason. And there's a place, I wouldn't be able to pull it up right now, but there's a place in the Internal Revenue Manual where the instructions to the, we have this somewhere in our videos, the instructions, oh, we have it somewhere on our website too, I think, don't we? Where's the search bar? Huh? Oh. Homepage. Search. Look up manual. No, it's not there. Let me see, IRM. Let me go to the home page again. There's a couple other callers, so I don't want to take up too much time. The bottom line is this place in the Internal Revenue Manual tells the auditors and examiners of the IRS that they can only use lower court cases for that particular person and that particular law that were that case applied to. They can't use it for other people and they can't use it for other laws. That they need to go to the Supreme Court decisions for their, for their decisions to make their arguments, basically. So they don't follow their own guidelines in that regard.
Okay.
Anyway, I better get on to other callers.
All right. Thank you very much.
Great talking with you, Richard, and you're so welcome. Keep fighting the good fight.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good night. Okay. Caller at area code 336 followed by 706. Oh, okay. 706. We were just talking to 336. Okay. Yeah. Okay, caller from area code 336, what is your first name and how did you hear about Freedom Law School? Huh? 706.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, this is Dale.
Hi, Dale.
About Freedom Law. Hi. Yeah, I heard about Freedom Law School from Mike Adams, a presentation he gave.
Great.
Yeah. And I've got three questions. The first two have to do with things that I know currently require a previous year tax return. One is I've got a couple of kids in college, and it seems every year I have to submit this thing called a FAFSA. And it always asks for my previous year tax return. So how do I handle that?
Right. Well, so if you didn't file and the law didn't require you to file, then you can just say I didn't earn enough federal income to file income tax, federal income taxes.
Oh, okay. I'll try that. The next thing is if I want to purchase a new house, typically when you apply for your loan, they ask you for your prior year tax return and a bunch of other things. The same thing?
That's bank loans that require that. You have to do is go to a non-bank mortgage lender. And if you go to the site, it's New Destiny Mortgage. He's a friend of ours that has worked on a list, a really good list of no tax return, no problem loans. And I don't know why it's not working. I need to tell him about this, but let me see if I can.
That's enough of a tip. I can look into it.
His link is broken there at the top for some reason. But anyway, he has a really good list of all the different loans that you can get that don't require a tax return.
Okay, excellent.
And we actually have a presentation about that.
Okay.
You might pay.
Yeah.
You might need to pay a little more in down payment. You might have a slightly higher interest rate, but it's well worth it to not be paying taxes.
Yeah, I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then the last question I have has to do with state taxes. So
okay.
I submitted 3 letters, and maybe I need to submit more. I submitted to my representative and 2 senators. Do I need to submit it to somebody at the state level? Well, I guess these are state representatives and state senators.
Well, if you're talking about our petitions to Congress campaign,
yes.
On our website,
yes.
No, those
uh-huh.
those would be going to the U.S. the 2 U.S. senators for your state. Those are not state senators, but the 2 U.S. senators for your state and the U.S. representative for your congressional district. They're not going to your state representative or your state senators. If you use if you follow the instructions on our petitions to Congress page.
Yeah, I think I did. Right.
Yeah, they would be going to Washington, D.C.
Right.
Yeah.
So do I need to send anything in relation to my state taxes? Maybe I don't, because Georgia is based off your U.S. federal tax. If you don't owe any U.S. federal tax, I guess you wouldn't owe any state tax. I guess that's
yeah,
all that
it's one of those. It's one of those piggyback states. Now, you know, a lot of these states that are piggyback states are a little bit more difficult to deal with. Some of them are very much more difficult to deal with, like California and there's a couple other, New York, Hawaii. I think it's Minnesota or Michigan, I think it is. Anyway, but the state of Georgia, yeah, it's one of those piggyback states. So, you know, like you said, if you don't owe federal income taxes and you don't owe Georgia taxes, but they're more likely to send you letters and do other things, file liens and such, levy bank accounts.
What do I need to do about the Georgia state taxes then?
Yeah, so do you have any past issues with them, or are you just asking about if you stop filing?
If I stop filing.
If you stop filing federal income taxes, then you might choose to go ahead and continue filing Georgia taxes because it's not nearly as much and your tax money is going towards things that are more likely to benefit you and your fellow citizens. So our focus is primarily on the federal income taxes because it's the big bull in the China shop, not just for America, but the whole world, you know, with all the mischief that they do, regime toppling around the world, military bases, 700 to 1,200, it's hard to count, but 700 to 1,200 military bases or strongholds around the world. You know, and $3.5 trillion a year now being just in income taxes alone. That's, you know, not to mention the other $800 billion in other taxes, but it's just become a huge monster. So we got to stop feeding the monster and actually empower states. But one thing you could do is to bring these issues up more with your state representatives and state senators. And just tell them, you know, hey, Tennessee and Florida on either side of us aren't charging income taxes. Why do you have to charge the working class income taxes. Why can't we get our state in, tax money from other sources? Why aren't property taxes and gasoline taxes and sales taxes enough?
Should I call in the hotline to talk more about the state taxes? I know you've got maybe somebody else to talk to at the 303 area code.
No, actually, I think you're the last caller. Well, I do have one other question to answer, even though he doesn't seem to be calling in. That's somebody that sent in an email. What was your question? Yeah, you might, if you need more details about that.
I'm not sure since Georgia piggybacks off the U.S., if I don't file the federal, how will I key any numbers for just Georgia?
Oh, if it's too difficult to just file the Georgia return without filling in the federal return, and you can use the, online. How have you usually been filing income taxes through a H&R Block or TurboTax or a tax preparer or doing it on your own?
I've got a tax preparer that I work with.
If it's not too expensive to continue using your tax preparer, or if you don't want to do it yourself on H&R Block or TurboTax, something like that, in either case, you can fill out the federal and state forms or answer all the federal and state questions. And then just don't allow it to the system or your tax preparer to file electronically. Require that they produce a paper form that you will mail in yourself. And then just don't mail in the federal form.
Okay. Yeah,
does that make sense? Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay.
Very good.
That's all good.
Okay. Good talking to you, Dale. And let me move on to Timothy.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Timothy had written in to questions at Freedom Law School with a question here. He says he lives in New York. And by that, he doesn't mean New York City. He means in the state of New York. And he works in New Jersey. But all that is relatively relevant. Well, not really, but it's not as important because he's self-employed. In other words, he receives 1099s, he says. He says he files tax returns every year, but did not pay what he, quote, owed, or at least what he thought he owed or confessed to owing, for tax years 2016, 17, 18, and 19. At one point, New York State took money from his bank account. In other words, they levied his bank account for New York income taxes. He started a payment plan, and that's satisfying New York. He also got an installment agreement set up with the IRS. He set up a new agreement last year because the monthly payments were too high. And that started in September of last year. And he owed a big balance, over $36,000 at that time. To date, he has paid no estimated taxes for this calendar year, 2023, to either federal or state. And his question is, how do I move forward? Would it be best to pay off the balance owed and not pay moving forward? Or can I stay on a payment plan and just not file moving forward? I assume they will not allow me to do that. I assume I have to file a state return for the state that does not follow the IRS. He heard Paymon mention that there are four states that are unique in that way. New Jersey is one of those states, but he doesn't live in New Jersey. He lives in New York. And he gets his 1099s from New Jersey people, apparently. So that's an issue that we'll have to look into separately for Timothy if he becomes a Freedom Lost, you know, a Restore Freedom Plan member. We can help him with those issues. Otherwise, he might want to just continue to file and pay state of New Jersey or New York income taxes, as the case may be, to kind of keep them off his back, so to speak, and just not file and pay federal income tax. But certainly, if he's not doing, if his 1099s are not coming from the federal government, which they most likely are not, then he would not be liable for federal income tax. And so, like I discussed with Dale, the caller just before, about state income taxes, that was the last issue I covered, and the same thing applies there. And then he also asks about eligibility for collecting Social Security. He should go back and listen to the very first caller, I believe. Yeah, it was Don, I believe, is the one that asked that question, and I answered it earlier. So, and lastly, he says he's glad he found us and our work, and he believes it is the path he wants to travel, meaning that he does want to go forward and become a Restore Freedom Plan member. And that makes so much sense, and he's glad he saw Paymon's interview with Mike Adams. So that's it. Thank you for listening, and good night.